97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Hey, here's something new this week. Sue's going to be doing Sue's News in the next hour at 4:20. Ethan has been dutifully filling in the last week. It seems, by the way, and I know you guys say this when I'm gone too, but it seems like you were gone for like a month.
I know. It's how it feels when one of us is gone.
Well, and for whatever reason, you know, this holiday week, I said this to Fred too, it seems like this is the slowest week of the year.
I don't know. Post-holiday?
I think so. I can't really figure it out. But we're getting through it. Tomorrow, of course, is a Friday. That means it's a Reardon Roundtable at 3 o'clock. John Lamping will be on the panel, former state senator, with another former state senator, Jeff Smith. All the kind of fun stuff in the 4 o'clock hour. Paul Hall on entertainment. Sue, I have a guest tomorrow night that I think is going to be fascinating. Your name is Liz Camlett. She is the wife, I've talked about this a little bit on the air. She is the wife of singer-songwriter Stephen Bishop. You remember On and On?
I do.
She's like 30-something years old. She's very young. She's very younger than Stephen Bishop. But she has an Instagram account where she every day breaks down a lot of the math of the music business and the royalties and
things. I have looked at this page.
And she's fascinating, right?
Yes.
So Liz is going to come on tomorrow
night. She's smart.
Because her whole Instagram feed has now become like an obsession for me. And she is super smart. So that's coming up tomorrow. And we got a Mizzou preview tomorrow as well. Look, Kusumano is going to be with us in the 4 o'clock hour. Mizzou plays KU in Lawrence tomorrow night. This is the one-year anniversary of the Charlie Kirk assassination. I'll never forget it because I was getting ready to do the show on this day a year ago. He's speaking on stage at Utah Valley University, and he's literally talking about some of these issues that he's gotten into with other people about transgender folks, and then this Tyler Robinson kid fires some shots from a building not too far off, and I think everybody who saw that, and I wasn't watching it live, but I saw it in the immediate aftermath, we all knew that that was not going to be something that Charlie Kirk could survive with. Peter Savodnik is back with us this afternoon from the Free Press. I know that you actually went to Utah in the aftermath of this, Peter, and spoke with the governor of Utah. How are you this afternoon, first and foremost? Thanks for joining us. On the Zoom, by the way, I think we can see you this afternoon.
Yes, good to see you.
So what was what do you remember about what happened a year ago and then how it kind of changed the country? Because this was unique. I've been around a lot of different, you know, political, not assassinations, but certainly political stories where bad things have happened over the years. But outside of Reagan's assassination or something like that, I've rarely seen the country react this way to someone like Charlie Kirk being shot and killed.
Well, it was horrific. And I think the aftermath has been pretty awful, especially for the American right, or whatever we mean by the American right now. It has greatly fractured and muddied the kind of MAGA or post-MAGA movement to the point that you now have, you know, the kind of the conspiracy theorists and the anti-Semites and the other kind of people in this inane post-MAGA crowd arguing with each other about sort of fracturing themselves. Nick Fuentes yesterday was lashing out at Tucker Carlson for demonizing algebra and so forth. That's in keeping with everything that has happened over the past year. And so I think what we learned after Kirk's murder was that he had managed to keep together, to hold together, I think, a lot of disparate groups, factions on the right. And after his death, that kind of cracked wide open, and it's become this kind of gelatinous fluid mess.
Yeah, you know, you referenced the algebra thing. Explain that a little bit for the audience who might have missed that, because to your point, Peter, some of the stuff that has happened in the aftermath of this, and I'm guessing you're maybe also referring to Candace Owens or her kookiness. I mean, it's just crazy. It's nuts. And, you know, how Erica Kirk and, you know, the family puts up with this, but there's still a year later a lot of nonsense, a lot of conspiracy theories, a lot of folks fighting amongst themselves that perhaps weren't doing that in the past, right?
I think a lot of that had been building prior to Kirk's murder. You got an early glimpse of it after the United States conducted its bombing campaign against Iran in June 2025, and there was a lot of talk inside the administration and in right wing circles about what was going on there. How had the isolationist movement lost to the so-called neoconservative movement? Had the neoconservatives, which is code for the Jews, had they co-opted the president? There was kind of rumblings about this. And then with Kirk's murder, it blows up. And I think what's happened is you have a lot of people, opportunists, who have taken advantage of that. I don't know what the inside of Tucker Carlson's mind is like, or Candace Owens, or Megyn Kelly, or any of the other people out there who have tried to cash in on this. I know that it's disgusting, and what it has done is simply to fracture the right, and has created this environment in which it's extraordinarily difficult now to have a serious conversation about anything, because you have unserious, profit-minded people looking to cash in on every development in the news cycle, and not considering at all the larger kind of implications for the country, the republic, all that.
Peter Savonik back with us from the Free Press. One of the things that you did is you referenced this. You sat down with Spencer Cox, who's the governor of Utah. And one of the questions that he asked, and unfortunately, I think we know the answer here, in the hours after Charlie's assassination, would this mark the end of a dark chapter in our history or the beginning of a darker chapter? And unfortunately, the latter seemingly is the path that we have chosen, right?
I think so, although it remains to be seen how this is going to unfold. Look, the implications for 2028 are huge, and I think that's going to tell us a lot more about the meaning of all this. So J.D. Vance has obviously tried to tap into this crowd. He's kind of straddling the MAGA, post-MAGA movements. I think that's going to prove to have been a disastrous political calculation. Maybe that will help Rubio or DeSantis or Cruz, whoever. That remains to be seen. I think that it's beyond doubt that the consequences of Kirk's murder will be felt for many election cycles to come.
And what do you make of where we are right now in this election cycle? We have a two-night, convention, midterm convention, which is unique. Of course, it's competing against the NFL, which was an idiotic move, and Trump's pissed about it, but somebody should have looked at the calendar. I don't know if this is going to move the needle. I saw some even more troubling polling out of Texas with Tallarico having a pretty good lead against Ken Paxton. So that's one of the reasons they're in Dallas. We're 8 weeks away now from this election, and you have a lot of people saying, look, the Democrats are doing Republicans a favor by leaning into all this DSA stuff, which is certainly true, but the economic factors are real as well. And then Trump's kind of, I think, lost a fair amount of people on the Iran issue. So I don't even know what to think about where people are going to be here in 8 weeks, Peter, except I don't think Republicans are going to end up doing very well.
Neither party will do as well as it should do. We're at a point in our politics where very few people are voting for anything. Most people are voting against. So the best that both parties can do is to try to conjure up the very, very worst case scenario that kind of tethered to their opponents, and then to scare the bejesus out of their voters and to spread that on social media. And I think that we'll see who succeeds the most. Republicans should be getting killed, but so should Democrats. Both of them have been disastrous, right? So the Republicans are run by a president who doesn't seem to know what he believes in. He's kind of all over the place. You mentioned Iran. There are the tariffs. There's the kind of general kind of, I think, confusion about sort of why the Trump administration exists, what the point of Trump 2.0 is. And at the same time, there's a Democratic Party that is being co-opted by radicals. So, one primary at a time. So the question remains, like, who's worse? And I think for most voters, for the voters who I think will save America, if it is to be saved, this is just a matter of sort of like daily fluctuations. Like, well, who offended me less today? And whoever that is on November 3rd will benefit handsomely.
It's going to be fascinating. We have our own mess here in Missouri, with congressional maps. Don't know if you've been following that folly, but that's kind of fun. So it'll be interesting. Peter, thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. You have a great week. Really appreciate it.
Likewise.
All right, take
care.
Get more at 971talk.com.